This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Now, live from the Malamut & Associates Law Studios, the revolution will be broadcast. This is the next generation of talk. Now, the Rich Cioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
What is Mueller? What's it going to be all about today? There's a piece I wanted to share with you from the New York Times. Fireworks, maybe, but will Mueller hearing be a turning point? I guess the question becomes this. What's the turning point? Turning towards what exactly? What are you hoping for? So in case you've been living under a rock or something for the last several years, Robert Mueller is the former special counsel who produced the 448-page Mueller report at the cost of between $30 and $50 million is what this little product cost here. And if you go to certain bookstores, like the other day, I was at the campus of the University of Pennsylvania, and I went through the bookstore, the Penn Bookshop, which is a beautiful bookshop. Holy cow. Of course, now they have the politics table. Now, the politics table consists of all of the books of the 2020 Democrat candidates, all their books, which all have the same whiny titles. They really do. It's amazing. And then there's no Trump book. The only Trump book is a book about how he cheats at golf. Kid you not. And then they have an entire table of just the Mueller report, various copies of the Mueller report in paperback form. I believe there's also one in a ceremonial leather-bound hard copy edition, a souvenir collectible leather-bound Mueller report edition at the campus of Penn. Obviously, that report has not been read by most people, and if they did read the report, they would find out that what Mueller said in his testimony when he came out, or not his testimony, his little speech, when he said, look, here's the deal. Everything I wrote is everything I wrote. They would understand then that Mueller chose not to recommend impeachment. Mueller chose not to do a sealed indictment for when the president leaves office. Mueller could have done those things. Mueller didn't do those things. Because you can't indict a sitting president, but you could certainly make a post-presidential indictment that's sealed, or you could even make a recommendation for that when he leaves office. Mueller chose not to do those things. And President Trump never fired him. See, that's the key point here, is he never fired him. And when people say things like, well, you know, he wanted to. No, it doesn't work that way. Either you fire him or you don't fire him. That's it. It's not he wanted to. Nobody stops him, you understand. There's no one who can stop the president from doing something like that. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean by that is, yes, Article 2 gives the president the absolute power in this matter. There is no check and balance in this matter. I know, that sounds crazy, right? What am I, endorsing a dictator here, a dictatorship, a totalitarian? What, me? What? No, see, Mueller's part of the executive branch of government. The special counsel was part of the executive branch. The government is part of the executive branch. So he wasn't part of the congressional branch, the legislative branch, and he's not part of the judicial branch. Therefore, the president, as the head of the executive branch, has the power to do what he wants within the executive branch of government. I know, it's crazy. It's crazy, right? Now, had Congress appointed a special counsel, if there was a special counsel law that they were following, and within the law it said the executive could not fire that person, well, then he couldn't. See, that's the difference. Why didn't he fire Mueller? Because he didn't want to. He told the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos when they were doing that little 36-hour interview, 36 hours of little George by your side, he told the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos from ABC News why he didn't want to fire Mueller. This is an important point here. Take a listen.
I asked Trump about some of the specific evidence of possible obstruction Mueller cited in his report.
A lot of evidence, including the episode where you ask your White House counsel, Don McGahn, you tell him Mueller has to go. You call him twice and say, Mueller has to go. Call me when it's done.
Okay, now the story on that, very simply. Number one, I was never going to fire Mueller. I never suggested firing Mueller.
That's not what he says.
Excuse me, I don't care what he says. It doesn't matter. That was to show everyone what a good counsel he was. Now, he may have gotten it confused with the fact that I've always said, and I said it to you and I said it to anybody that would listen, Robert Mueller was conflicted.
But why would Don McGahn lie? Why would he lie under oath?
Because he wanted to make himself look like a good lawyer, or Or he believed it because I would constantly tell anybody that would listen, including you, including the media, that Robert Mueller was conflicted. Robert Mueller had a total conflict of interest. I didn't say that. Article 2, I would be allowed to fire Robert Mueller. There was not, assuming I did all of the things I said, I want to fire him. Number one, I didn't. He wasn't fired. Okay, number one, very importantly. But more importantly, Article 2 allows me to do whatever I want. Article 2 would have allowed me to fire him.
So it sounds
like I wasn't going to fire. You know why? Because I watched Richard Nixon go around firing everybody, and that didn't work out too well. So, very simply, Article 2 would allow me to do it.
Article 2 of the Constitution outlines the powers of the presidency. And the president's defenders argue he cannot commit obstruction of justice while exercising those powers.
So yesterday, the president was talking to some young people, and he said the same thing about Article 2 lets me do whatever I want. Of course, there was the usual histrionic outrage of, hey, oh, he's a dictator. Look at him. He's doing whatever he wants. He was talking to Turning Point USA, young conservatives, and he said, quote, then I have an Article 2 when I have the right to do whatever I want as president. Now, obviously, that everybody took it and said, look, this is it. Finally, he's becoming the dictator. Here it comes. We knew it was going to happen. And they all ran with it. Now, I have to give major, major credit here to Aaron Blake of The Washington Post. Major credit here. Aaron Blake is a senior political reporter. He writes for The Fix at The Washington Post. I have to give him serious props here. Because he went on Twitter yesterday and he wrote the following, and I'm going to share with you his tweets because this is very important to understand. Quote, Trump's comments today about Article 2 of the Constitution giving him, quote, the right to do whatever I want as president are starting to make the rounds. He was talking about it in the context of the Mueller probe, which he has done multiple times before. Example one. And then he shows you the clip of him and the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos, another clip of the president from the White House Rose Garden talking to the press and saying, I can do whatever I want. Article 2 gives me that power. Aaron Blake, Washington Post, again, writing this. Is Trump being intentionally vague and provocative about Article 2? Sure, possibly. Did he just make a broad claim to dictatorial powers? No. Okay, that's the conclusion of Aaron Blake of the Washington Post. The president, under Article 2, absolutely had the power to fire Mueller. He did. He didn't. He could have, and nobody could have stopped him. See, that's the thing. Nobody could have stopped him. There are certain powers the president has that they can't be stopped. One of those, by the way, is the ability to launch nuclear weapons. This is a little bit of a scary truth, but there's no check and balance to the president launching nuclear weapons. He doesn't need the generals to sign off. He doesn't need a commander to sign off. In fact, if you don't do it, then You go to prison if you don't listen to the president. Because of the nature of when we were in the height of the Cold War, nuclear missiles, and it was the idea of the first strike, and then, of course, the counterstrike, and then the idea that they would be trying to take our missiles out. So we couldn't have a committee hearing. We couldn't have Congress voting on it. You had to have one person make the call before all of our arsenal was wiped out. That's the president. He's unchecked in that power. Scary, obviously. Scary power. It's a lot of power. But you understand why they gave it to the president back then. They gave it to the president back then because they couldn't say, well, should we counterstrike? All eyes, yes. So the noes have it, and then boom, and then we're blown up. That was the thinking. The other power the president has, absolutely, is to fire whoever he wants in the executive branch, unless there's some protection under law that would supersede that. For example, some sort of a labor protection law, keeping that position a non-political position, that sort of thing. Did Mueller have that? No. Could he have fired him? Yes. Could anyone have stopped him? No. So then, therefore, it's not obstruction of justice. Even the thought of doing it doesn't make it obstruction of justice. I could think about, going out and picking up a hooker. If I don't do it, I haven't done it. You know, the thought of doing it does not make it the same thing as doing it. You know, the better part of my nature and my character says, you know what, why don't you drive by the nice streetwalker and say hello and wave versus letting her in your car. That's the kind of thing that separates me from, say, the little guy who was married to the supermodel and picked up the
Hugh Grant.
Right. I think he's still married to her, though, isn't he?
Elizabeth Hurley? No.
No, they got divorced?
Yeah.
Well, hence why I'm going to keep driving by when I see the streetwalker, you know?
Desiree Brown.
You got to learn from Hugh Grant. It's the Hugh Grant rule. I don't know where this came from. I don't know how this, my mind works sometimes. I really don't get it. But I haven't done it. I haven't committed the deed. Thinking about it is not the same thing as doing it. And that's what they're going to focus on today is that the president. Well, he wanted to fire him, but he didn't. Well, he wanted to. Yeah, well, listen, I wanted to grab that second piece of pie. I didn't. I wanted to do that. I wanted to do these things. I didn't. So that's the reality here of the situation. And of course, the freak out over Article 2 yesterday. I was just kind of getting ready for bed, putting the kids to bed and everything, and I see on Twitter the blow up of Article 2. Article 2 and all the outrage. Trump thinks he can do whatever the hell he wants. Trump falsely claims Constitution gives him the right to do whatever he wants, but that's not true. And it goes on. And of course now, in the usual sense of outrage in which we live, here it comes. Dictator Donnie. Here we go. Here it is. Unlimited power. And I got, like I said, I got to give Aaron Blake of the Washington Post enormous credit here for coming out and saying and being the sober-minded adult in the room to say, no, not what he's doing. He's talking about in the context of firing Mueller. And he's right. Nixon had the ability to do those things, too. And Trump's point in that is, look, it was a real political disaster for Nixon. So I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to go down that road. The whole purpose of having advisors, this is why you have an advisor if you're the president. Or I think advisors in all walks of life are important. I really do. Coaches, advisors, it's important to have them because somebody is there sometimes to tell you what you can't see because you're so in the moment of it. You know, and you're so in the moment of it. So you have an advisor around you to say, look, Mr. President, look, if we fire Mueller, you fire Mueller, sir, then here's what's going to happen. You're going to lose the support of this person, that person, this person. You're going to have all these people thinking you're guilty. You're not guilty. So just go through with it. Just go through it, and you're going to ride the wave. And you're going to come out politically stronger in the end. And then when somebody has the reaction, which is a human reaction, by the way, this guy's coming after me and my family and coming after everything, and I'm innocent. I didn't do anything. Fire this SOB. Fire this SOB. It's a perfectly human reaction. The better the advisors are there to try to elicit the better angels of your nature to come out and do the right thing. That's why you have advisors, why presidents have advisors. It's why presidents don't do the things that sometimes their instincts make them want to do because they're so in it. They're so in the situation and dealing with the stress of being the president that they also might make a decision that's based on purely emotion and make a huge mistake. That's the reason for that. So if you listen to your advisors and you don't do it, you haven't done it. It's the same thing as if you were in the Situation Room and you thought that Russia had launched nuclear weapons and they tell you, no, sir, it was just the Whopper. It's just the Whopper. It's a game. It's a game, sir. It's a war game. It's gone wrong. This kid came in there. Now the Whopper thinks it's playing global thermonuclear war and it's not the right. And you don't launch nuclear missiles on Russia because the better angels of your nature have gotten to you. Take a listen.
I have an Article 2 where I have the right to do whatever I want as president, but I don't even talk about that because they did a report and there was no obstruction. After looking at it, our great attorney general read it. He's a total professional. He said, there's nothing here. There's no obstruction.
All right. So see, clearly within the context of firing Mueller. By the way, did nobody get my War Games reference?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, you did get it. Yes. All right. I didn't know if you've seen it or not.
War Games? One of my favorite
movies.
It's
a great movie, right? The Whopper? Yeah. It's a game! It's a game! I love that movie. Oh, it's so good. That's such a great movie.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Okay, welcome back to the Zeoli Show. Glad you're here. Yesterday was an absolute epic disaster for Democrats. It really was. I mean, Mueller was just you couldn't help but at times feel bad for the guy and other times realize the guy was a total fraud. It was kind of back and forth. But if you watched it yesterday, you walked away with a couple of observations, I believe. Number one is there's no way in hell Mueller read the Mueller report. There's no way he wrote the Mueller report. I didn't expect him to write it because let's face it, people usually don't write their own stuff. If somebody write it for them, whether it's a legal opinion or something like that. You know, the people write it and then the guy puts his name on it. But I expected him to read it. He didn't read it. That's why the whole time yesterday I kept going, well, I won't read from the report, but I'll let you read from the report. Why don't you tell me what's in the report? Why don't you tell me what's in the report, Congressman? Why don't you? Back and forth. It was so bad. And of course now, the question of where do Democrats go from here? I mean, if they were smart, they would never mention this again. They would act like it never happened. The best thing that Democrats could do would be to pretend it never happened and then just walk away from this and never bring it up again. Never bring up Russia, never bring up impeachment, collusion, nothing. Just walk away. But you know, and I know, they don't have it in them to walk away. And that's their problem. That's their problem with this. I mean, even yesterday after the hearing was over, the vampiric one, Nancy Pelosi, came out and said, it's a historic day. We saw evidence. Because she's still trying to keep the lunatic fringe happy. And you got to forget those people and move on. You really do. Political advice to them: forget the lunatic fringe that so hates the president, wants to see him gone, and drop it and knock it off and move on. And tell Nadler he's got to cut the crap, or he's out as chairman of the committee. You know what I mean? And move on to stuff, because otherwise the entire party is going to be dragged down into the absolute trenches they may not recover from for years. For years, it's very possible. It's that bad for them at this point. But I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe when after yesterday, instead of Pelosi coming out and saying, well, it's time to move on. Well, the evidence today we heard is a historic day. And I got that. Now we need to keep looking at digging at that. Because the four people, the Suicide Squad, Ocasio-Cortez plus three, they want this and they won't let it go. And so they keep pushing for it. Bad. Really, really bad. Just absolute clown show yesterday. And then, of course, the other question becomes this. With all the money that was spent on this, all the money, all the time, all the money that our government put into this, and yesterday was the culmination of that. It was the opus magnus of everything that they've done in this entire probe. And that's what you got? That's what you got? I mean, not since Waterworld have people been so disappointed by such a big budget letdown. Absolute big budget letdown. I mean, Waterworld cost like what? It was like $120 billion, right? You remember that movie? I don't know what made me think of that. No, but
it's a good comparison.
Kevin Costner with the web feet.
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad.
It was so bad, yeah. Right? But they built that up. Remember how much they hyped up Waterworld? It was the most expensive movie ever made. And people watched it and went, really? Could have shot that in my pool in the backyard. It's a piece of crap. That's what it was like. This giant letdown. I mean, man. And of course, since we're doing movie analogies, I love, this is my favorite analogy yesterday from one of my favorite scenes of one of my favorite movies. This is very much, I think, from the setting it up of here's what we got. The guy who begins this, the senator in this, so much like Nadler. Here's what we got. We're finally going to do it. We finally got it. And then just the absolute letdown.
Were you a member of the Corleone family? Did you serve under Capo regime? Peter Clemenza, under Vito Corleone, also known as the Godfather.
I never knew no Godfather. I got my own family, Senator.
Mr. Pentangeli, you are contradicting a sworn statement you previously made to me and signed. I ask you again, sir, here and now, under oath, were you at any time a member of a crime organization headed by Michael Corleone?
I don't know nothing about that. Oh. I was in the olive oil business with his father, but that was a long time ago, that's all.
We have a sworn affidavit. We have it. Your sworn affidavit that you murdered on the orders of Michael Corleone. Do you deny this confession? And do you realize what will happen as a result of your denial?
Look, the FBI guys, they promised me a deal. So I made up a lot of stuff about Michael Corleone, because that's what they wanted. But it was all lies. Everything. And I kept saying, Michael Corleone did this. And Michael Corleone did that. So I said, yeah, sure.
Mr. Corleone.
Oh, man, it's fantastic. Frank Pentangeli testifying. I said, sure. This committee owes my client an apology, Senator. That was very much a little bit like yesterday. Here's a little bit of Mueller. Little low-energy Mueller, I think, a little bit of this. There's a lot of this, but cut three.
Your report states that your investigative team included 19 lawyers and approximately 40 FBI agents and analysts and accountants. Are those numbers accurate?
Could you repeat that, please?
Is it also true that you issued over 2,800 subpoenas, executed nearly 500 search warrants, obtained more than 230 orders for communication records and 50 pen registers?
That went a little fast for me.
Okay. In your report, I'll make this very simple. You did a lot of work, correct?
Yes, that I agree with.
A lot of subpoenas, a lot of pen registers.
A lot of subpoenas.
Yes. Okay, we'll walk this really slow if we need to.
A lot of search warrants. That's
all right, a lot of search warrants, a lot of things. So you're very thorough.
The what?
In your opinion, very thorough. You listed this out in your report, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. So that would be a yes.
Pardon?
That would be a yes.
Yes.
That's, thank you. In the colloquial context, are collusion and conspiracy essentially synonymous terms?
You're going to have to repeat that for me.
The president committed the crime of obstruction. You could not publicly state that in your report or here today.
Can you repeat the question, sir? You're going to have to repeat that for me. And what was the question, sir?
Correct.
And where are you reading from on that?
I'm reading from my question.
Then could you repeat it?
Okay.
Attorney number two in the Inspector General's report and Strzok both worked on your team, didn't they?
Pardon me?
Yes. They both worked on your team, didn't they?
I know. I heard Strzok. Who else were you talking about?
Attorney number two identified in the Inspector General's report.
Okay. And the question was?
Volume 2, page 87 and 88 of your report. Oh, true?
I'm sorry. Could you again repeat the question?
Oh, my God.
First of all, do we not have hearing aids for the man? That's my first question. Does his insurance not cover that cochlear implant? That's the first question I have right there. Wait. What are you reading from? My question. Oh, and what was it? Get off my lawn. I was waiting for that the entire time yesterday for him to just stand up and go, will you kids get off my lawn? What? Huh?
Oh, my God.
Who? Give me some sweet tea. Somebody. Where are my teeth? Sorry, I didn't have my teeth in there. There's so much here. There's just so much. I don't even know where to begin. But there's a lot. There's a lot of outrage, obviously, from Democrats who realize now. Mueller couldn't remember who first hired him. If you like me, you get hired by presidents all the time. So obviously you're going to forget which one hired you. I mean, obviously, because it's an everyday occurrence. Getting hired by a president of the United States of America. And we've had hundreds of them. In our nation's history, we've had hundreds of them. So very easy to forget, considering all the hundreds of presidents we've had and how many times people get hired. Twice a day. You'll probably today, 3-4 times today, get hired by a president. Maybe president of East America or West America or South America or North. Hard to say. Take a listen.
You are a Marine. You served in Vietnam and earned a Bronze Star and a Purple Heart. Correct?
Correct.
Which president appointed you to become the United States Attorney for Massachusetts?
Which senator?
Which president?
Oh, which president?
That's how that works.
I think that was President Bush.
According to my notes, it was President Ronald Reagan had the honor to do so. Under whose
administration? My mistake.
Oh, my God.
Wait, which senator? Wait, that was my mayor. No, he'll put me on the school board? Wait. No, I ran for school board in...
what a disaster.
In 62. Wait, who's... Reagan who? Reagan who? Oh, my bad.
What a disaster.
Man. The thing about it, too, is that this is... It was so bad. There's so many hours of that. That there's so many, many hours of this going on and on that at some point you just had to almost turn off because you could kind of feel sorry for him, but then you didn't feel sorry for him, so you just had to kind of keep going with it. It's just... So, as you can imagine, a lot of pundits were very disappointed yesterday. Where do we begin? Let's see. How about this? Why don't we start with a montage of before... Well, we'll save the montage. We'll do that. Why don't we do that? How about we do this? Chris Matthews wonders, Second term or prison term for Trump.
Oh, no.
As his guests panic. All right, let's do a little Chris Matthews before 6 a.m. I think it's the right thing to do. Go ahead.
Second term or prison term? That's my hardball. That's the message from today's testimony by special counsel Robert Mueller. A second term for Trump or a prison term for Trump?
That's what you got out
Trump
of it, huh?
Trump was not exonerated in the investigation by Mueller and stands vulnerable to indictment the second he leaves office. In a dramatic double feature today, Robert Mueller testified before the House Judiciary.
By the way, you know what it is? Okay, let me explain with it. Chris Matthews is the one critic who liked Waterworld.
It's true.
It was a sweeping, epic film.
There's always that one.
Always the one. Yeah. Costner was at the top of his game. Never better. This is vintage Costner in this movie. An absolute spectacle, a grand, you'll never see a movie better. He's the one critic who liked Waterworld. That's Chris Matthews right now. Everybody else goes, this thing was a bomb, man. Epic bomb. Matthews, best day ever. Amazing day. Prison term. I'm surprised they didn't lock the guy up yesterday. All right, clearly there's a lot to get to. Only just getting warmed up. They haven't even scratched the surface of this yet. 855-839-1210. By the way, today's also a good day. I should caution you. You might be laughing quite a bit today, so please concentrate on the road. I just want to give that disclaimer so we don't get sued. Also, if you're looking for anything that's non-Mueller related, we are going to do some topics like that. We've got a great apple cider tasting coming up later in the show.
No, we're not.
And also, we're going to do favorite cheesesteak topping. We're not doing that. All right. So we're just mostly Mueller today.
Yes.
All right.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Fair enough.
Thanks for taking the Zioli Show with you. Rich Zioli. Weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
One of the big things yesterday, which was amazing, of course, was the Fusion GPS exchange with Robert Mueller. That was unbelievable. But there were so many moments yesterday that are remarkable in terms of just how bad this was for Democrats and for Robert Mueller. So where do they go from here? What do they do now? Is impeachment over for them or not? We're going to find out. Let me welcome back to the show Corey Lewandowski, of course, President Trump's first campaign manager and the reason why he won the presidency, in my opinion. Corey, welcome back, man. How you been?
Rich, I'm doing great. How are you today?
Doing great. It's a good day today. It's a beautiful day. What? How could you not be in a good mood, right?
Well, after yesterday's fiasco, I think that the American people are saying, this is over. Let's get past this. There's no there. And let's get back to the people's business. So today is a very good day for the president. Yesterday was a very successful day for the president. And I think the American people, too.
I mean, how bad was Robert Mueller yesterday on that stand? I mean, it was just, I couldn't, there were times I had to turn the TV off because I just couldn't take it. It was a combination of laughter and just mocking him that made me just have to literally turn the TV off at times.
Rich, when he couldn't think of the word collusion for probably 45 seconds when being asked by the congressman from Vermont, it was actually a little shameful. Obviously, Robert Mueller didn't want to be there. That was very evident. He clearly did not write this report, even though his name was on it. He really had no oversight over this investigation from the questioning yesterday, because when they asked him questions, he said, I can't talk about that. And he said, then the members of Congress said, well, it's on page 97. He said, well, then it must be true. I mean, this is clearly a man who was propped up as an individual who was supposed to be unbiased, but surrounded himself with partisan Democrats who clearly wanted to see the president taken down to find evidence that crimes were committed of which they could not find. And he was basically a prop, and it's very disappointing, I think. And the Democrats really lost a lot of credibility yesterday with Bob Mueller's testimony.
No doubt. By the way, Corey's book, Trump, America First, comes out. When does that come out, Corey? Is it out already, or is it...
No, Rich, I think I'm going to have it right probably March of next year.
Nice.
America First, which is all about the successes of this president, what he's been able to accomplish, fighting not just the Democrats, but mostly the mainstream media and the Democrats. And when you look at trade, you look at the economy, You look at all of the successes, economic security, homeland security, national security. This president has put our country in a position to be successful. And that's what I want to remind the American people of as they go into the election year.
All right, good. We'll do another book event. We had a lot of fun with you last time you came to town, so we'll do that again.
Thank you. That was a phenomenal event.
So the economy, obviously, Corey, I mean, it's unbelievable right now. You and I agree that the economy is everything. That's what matters in these elections, certainly in places like Pennsylvania, where I am today. It matters. And now the Democrats, I guess because they realize this impeachment thing is over, they have nothing now. Now they're going to try to undercut the president's economic record, which is amazing.
Well, they have to, but you also have to remember that the Democrats are now in control of Congress, and they have to go and run on a record, and they have nothing to stand on because the success of our economy is because of a couple factors. Number one is the deregulation of the federal government, meaning cutting the rules and regulations that have put a stranglehold on small business owners and large businesses alike for the last 20 years. The president, through executive orders and through his administration, have been able to deregulate the government. The second thing is, you know, the massive tax cuts that this president forced through Congress, pledged to do, got done, but the Democrats have nothing to run on because for the first 7 months of their tenure in Washington, D.C., they have not passed one piece of legislation that's helped the American economy grow. They have not done one thing to help American workers. And so when you go to the ballot box in November of 2020, the question that most people ask themselves are, am I better off today than I was 3 or 4 years ago? And by every standard, every economic standard, the answer is yes. We have more people working today, Rich, than ever in our nation's history. More African Americans, more Hispanic Americans, more Asian Americans, more women. There are more people working today, more jobs available today than ever before. And for the people who don't want to work, it's now their choice. And so, you know, when you go to the ballot box, you have to determine, do I want to continue on the path of economic prosperity, or do I want to go back to the days where Barack Obama's economy was slow and 1.2 and 1.3% growth was the new normal? And I really think this is the path of Donald Trump to succeed going forward.
Corey Lewandowski is here, of course, the president's first campaign manager, there with him early in the days when people said he had no chance of becoming president, but Corey knew better. Corey, of course, also the author of the book "Let Trump Be Trump," among other books. You're like an author now. I mean, you're officially, I think, the title of author. That's pretty cool.
Can you believe that? I mean, you know, look, I could barely read in high school, I think, and now, yeah, I've got 2 New York Times bestsellers, which is kind of cool. That drives the left crazy because you know the Trump supporters have come out to support all of the good work that me and Dave Bossie have done together, and so it's a very humbling thing. And the best part is all these lunatics on the left. You know, they don't know what to do, but they read our books and they go, you know what? That's exactly right, because Dave and I have this ability to tell people the truth, whether it's about the campaign or it's about Trump's enemies. And, you know, never has somebody read our book and come back to us and said, your facts are wrong, unlike many of the other books. So we're very lucky, and to be considered an author, I think, is high praise. Thank you.
Well, I guess now the Democrats, if they were smart politically, they would say, this is over, move on, enough with this stuff, no more impeachment talk, end it. The problem, as I see it, Corey, is that they have so many lunatics on the extreme fringe of their base that are demanding impeachment. They will not stop. They won't give it up. And I think the more they go down this road, the more politically disastrous it is for them. I don't think they have the self-discipline to walk away from this now. I don't think they can help themselves.
Well, because Nancy Pelosi is being perceived as the moderate in the Democratic Party
now. Amazing.
Because AOC plus three is really, you know, the far fringe of the party. And she is forcing people to continue to go after things that represent a socialist agenda. And when you look at the leaders of the Democratic Party, those individuals who are running for president of the United States, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris, they are so far to the left, so far out of the realm of mainstream where America is, that they have to continue to be progressive. It's free everything, free health care, free education, particularly if you're in the country illegally. And so with that, right, Nancy tries to look like a rational person, saying there is no chance that Donald Trump is going to be removed from office through the Senate process. So let's not have an impeachment. If the Democrats do this, I predict that they will not only lose the majorities in 2020 in the House of Representatives, they'll go back to the minority, but Donald Trump will get reelected with a larger electoral margin of victory than he did in the 2016 election.
Yeah, I agree with you. Who would be your dream candidate if you had a pick for the Democrats to nominate to go up against the president?
Oh, for me, because I'm selfish and I want to see the president win, I want to see Bernie Sanders elect, as their nominee.
Me too, for different reasons, because I love to do an impression of him. But I'm with you, Corey. Bernie all the way, man. Let's do it.
Rick, if Bernie is their nominee, and then it's truly about socialism. This is a man who decided to honeymoon in communist Russia. This is a man who believes that, it's do as I say, not as I do. And we've seen the controversy in his campaign where he thinks everybody should make $15 an hour except when he's actually paying people. Now, they can make $15 an hour, but we have to cut your hours back. So, this is what socialism is really about, which is tell everybody else how to do it, but when you have the responsibility to do it, you choose not to. So Bernie Sanders is a great candidate for us. He doesn't have the stamina to compete with Donald Trump. He doesn't have the ideas to compete with Donald Trump. And so I would love to see him as the Democratic nominee because it all but ensures us, probably a 40-state victory.
Yeah, and it seems to me like his campaign they're doing a terrible job, but Biden's campaign just looks like it's imploding. It's so obvious that the Democrats do not want him as their nominee because he represents the last of the Democrat moderates. I mean, I don't think he's a moderate, but he pretends to be at least. But it's so obvious, Corey, that they want to destroy Joe Biden no matter what it takes.
And they will do that. Don't forget, these are Joe's quote-unquote friends, right, from Washington, D.C. that are doing this to him. The Trump campaign has not started on Joe Biden yet, but what we have seen is that he has not done enough for the African American community during his 36 years in the U.S. Senate and his 8 years as the vice president. He has not done enough for women, and so these are his friends pointing out his record. Joe Biden is a fairly moderate person. He claims to be, Rich, I know you're from Pennsylvania, he claims to be the kid from Scranton, but he hasn't lived in Scranton in 61 years. So at some point, you can't be from there anymore, particularly, right. Maybe you're actually from Delaware, because I don't think the people of Delaware would appreciate the fact that you served in the U.S. Senate for 36 years and you're not from that state. But Joe Biden, I don't think, is going to survive past the South Carolina primary because the Democrat far-left liberal base does not want him. They don't want that, which is great for the Republicans because it'll be a clear contrast at the ballot box. And it will be a runaway election, much like Ronald Reagan's 1984 reelect.
Corey Lewandowski, always a pleasure, my friend. We'll keep talking to you throughout this campaign.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Yesterday, the big reaction to Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor in the Russia collusion, non-collusion probe, was the topic of the day for sure. And a lot of analysis on this. And interestingly enough, a conversation at some point during the day got into whether or not Robert Mueller has Alzheimer's and whether or not Robert Mueller has dementia and on and on. And it was actually nauseating to me to listen to some of the stuff that was being said about, look, this is a disease and we got to feel sorry for the guy. You got to focus on the work and not the whatever ailment he might have, because the truth of the matter is that you don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. And obviously, he and his advisors and his chief of staff who was sitting next to him and his lawyer who was there, they all felt that he was up to the task. Otherwise, they would have used a medical excuse to not be there. There are questions about whether or not Robert Mueller was ever even involved. Was he just the face of this whole operation? Was he just the face of the Mueller probe? Because it was really going to be a bunch of very partisan anti-Trump Democrats, but then with Mueller there, they thought he would have the gravitas and the bipartisan respect to be able to command it. Was he just a dirty cop? I mean, just a dirty cop who went after people and used the absolute unlimited power of the federal government to badger people that nothing to do with the Russia probe, but to just go after them and make their life a living hell, people that he didn't even charge. Was it him? Or the whole time, was he just a stuttering old man in the corner who didn't even know what the hell was happening? I have a hard time buying into that narrative, by the way. I really do. There are too many smart people around him, even if he's bonkers and lost it and he's lost his marbles and that, there were too many smart people around him yesterday to not to allow that to happen if that was the case. Because what? Think about this now. If Robert Mueller truly has dementia or Alzheimer's or some sort of early onset or something, that you don't let a guy like that testify because there are things that he can't say, legally he can't say, because there are ongoing probes that are under seal. There's indictments, there's other things, grand jury testimony. You wouldn't risk it because he might say something that could compromise an entire investigation. Like literally now have to have a case thrown out of federal court. So do I buy that? I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. And, you know, yesterday there were a lot of people slamming people like me for making jokes about him, going, ah, you're so, where's your compassion? A, I have none. But B, I don't buy it. That's why. I'm not suggesting that he was faking it yesterday. I'm just suggesting that he's doing what prosecutors who are under fire do, which is to act as if they know nothing. It's the old Hogan's Heroes defense. I know nothing. I don't know. I was barely here. I don't know. So that's the other thing, too, is I don't really buy that Robert Mueller was just the face of this. I don't buy that theory either, that he was just there so that they could do all their stuff behind the scenes. They did everything. Nothing changed with having him there. I don't buy that for a second. I think Robert Mueller is as John Nolte at Breitbart put it, he's a dirty cop. He's a dirty cop who was caught, and he's stammering, trying to get out of it, trying to make sure he doesn't incriminate himself as he's testifying under oath. Because there are too many people there that would have pulled the plug. Too many people that would have pulled the plug if they thought Robert Mueller was not medically up to the task. And there are too many things too many active issues in play that could be ruined by that. So no, come on, that's just the common sense test. When he started bringing all these very important people around him, it occurred to me that they were worried about him, concerned about him, but probably more from the perspective of potentially incriminating himself than they were about him not being able to do it because he's suffering from something. Now, by the way, maybe he is. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, and I have no interest in playing one. I leave that to Dr. Maz, but who literally played one on TV. Well, he was an advisor on ER many years ago, but I leave that to him. But all I know is that from looking at what he did by going after American citizens who had nothing to do with the Russia probe, but everything to do with other things that were outside of his purview, he didn't walk away from that. He went after them with fist-pounding efficiency to put people in prison. Even for things like lying to him. You know, people like Carter Page and George Papadopoulos, people like Papadopoulos who were never even charged. So, you know, this idea that he's just this victim. You know, he's a victim here. This narrative, I completely reject it. Totally reject it. This guy, for 3 years and $34 million, used every power he had to go after, intimidate, harass people for things that had nothing to do with Russians coming in and invading our election system. If that is the case where we have this active threat of Russians coming after our election system, I want to ask this logical question then. Why spend so much of your time going after Paul Manafort for things that had nothing to do with Russian collusion? Right? I mean, look, Manafort's a bad dude. There's no doubt about that. Guy's corrupt and bribes and everything like that. Had he not worked for Trump, we never would have known this, and Manafort would be on a golf course somewhere. But if this Russia threat was so real, why do you spend so much time going after that guy and his finances and Flynn and his finances and everything else? Why? As opposed to trying to, as quickly as possible, understand the extent to which Russia was trying to influence our election, and then wrap it up and then make changes and make systematic changes and put these changes in place and get moving on it. That's the first question that should be asked. And there's no answer to that, of course, because I think it's very obvious now that this notion of Russian collusion in our election system is the most overhyped and BS thing ever. We have, and I've said this for years, we don't have a national presidential election. We have 50 elections. The states vote, territories too. But we don't have a national election in this country. The only way you could influence an election would be to some way change the votes in voting machines. But those are handled by counties. Those are handled by local officials who do a very good job of overseeing those to make sure that the vote totals match or that the vote totals don't match. I mean, sometimes they make sure they do a good job of that, too, that the vote totals absolutely don't match. That's fair. You know, I mean, that's Philly and Cook County. What are you going to do? But that whole idea of Russian collusion, let's assume for a second it was real and it almost happened and almost took the election. Then I think anything that wasn't related to that should have just been sent to another prosecutor because Mueller had a job to do that was all about figuring this out and stopping it before it could happen again. But that's not what happened, is it? No, it's not. It's not what happened. in this. He went down roads that had nothing to do with his original charge. And he went after and harassed private citizens who he never even charged with a crime. He went after other people and got them on lying because they mistook a meeting or they neglected to tell him something that he knew, the old trap. Do I think that he is this victim, this celebrated American hero? No. Look, I appreciate his service to our country in Vietnam. I appreciate that. I do. But that's not relevant in this instance. You have to look at this issue. It's like when people who are veterans are charged with crimes, or people who are actively on duty are charged with crimes. You appreciate what they've done, but you can maybe take that into account in terms of sentencing or something like that, but you have to deal with the crime. You have to deal with the issue of what's happening. That's how that works. That's how our system works. You don't get special points in terms of guilt or innocence based on the fact of whether or not you've worn a uniform. It can't work that way. And in my opinion, Robert Mueller, a lot of this now with Democrats, he's a war hero. And how dare you come out and say anything about the guy? So we can't say bad things now about somebody who's ever served in war? Is that the new standard? It's very hard to keep up with this. It really is, with the ever-changing standards of something. All I know is that as a civil libertarian, which I consider myself to be, that is somebody who adamantly defends our civil liberties, which are in the Bill of Rights, I find the guy to be an authoritarian of the utmost degree. I think he was like that when he was FBI director, and I think he was like that when he was a special counsel. And I think yesterday was his attempts to not incriminate himself, to not say anything that could come back and blow one of his other ongoing prosecutions. I think a lot of this whole stuttering old man, a lot of it probably was an act, quite frankly, because the people around him are too smart and too much is on the line to allow him to be in a position where he wasn't truly mentally in his mental capacity would be under question, where then he could then blow a major federal prosecution. So it's the old smell test. It's or the Occam's razor. The simplest answer is always the easiest one. Is he really a guy who's lost his marbles? If he was, he wouldn't have been there yesterday. It's the bottom line. That's the truth. And you know that, and I know that, and that's just the way it is. 855-839-1210. But then again, maybe somebody got to him. Maybe somebody got to him. That's also the possibility that was put out by Congressman Ted Lieu. Maybe somebody got to him. Maybe that somebody was in the back of the room. We didn't even know he was there. But we have exclusive audio of maybe of what happened, which you'll hear only on this show.
Exclusive,
because that's how things work on this program. So I would highly encourage you to keep listening. You never know what you're going to learn.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.